And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. It is a great day if you are following the election campaign. There's been another switch, a switcheroo. And yes, they are planning to go ahead from no labels with finding some kind of third-party candidate to run for president. They haven't found the person yet. And the idea that they are planning to have a line on the ballot in as many states as they can without knowing who it is that people are supposed to be waiting for, this is a little bit crazy. There's also two big new polls, very prestigious polls, that show a switch in the leadership position into who is actually winning the presidential campaign. We've gone through a couple of weeks now where President Trump has had an advantage, particularly in swing states. Well, now there are several polls that show that things have flipped over in that regard. Was that because of President Biden's State of the Union speech, which at least showed that he had energy and showed that he was feisty and actually not Sleepy Joe anymore? And no, because these polls were taken before he delivered that speech, and they may be doing even better for Joe Biden coming along. There's also a very prominent conservative leader, somebody who has been enormously admired and supported in the religious conservative movement, who now writes an editorial where he says that people who supported Nikki Haley should jump over and support Joe Biden. Really? And speaking of taking controversial positions, Pope Francis has actually said in an interview that he wants Ukraine to wave the white flag. And what exactly does that mean? We will get to that. We will also get to the very moving moment. It was one of the high points at the Oscar ceremonies last night. The winner for the best full-length documentary was a remarkable film called 20 Hours in Mariupol, which is about the brutality of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. This is the first time that any Ukrainian has won an Academy Award of any kind, and they won for the best documentary. We will play a little bit of what Mstislav Chernov, the writer-director of that remarkable film, had to say. And then there was also a debate at the Oscars. At the very, very end of the show, for people in the East Coast, they may not have stayed up that late, but it was surely one of the highlights of the show. Everyone thought initially it was a joke. It's not a joke. It's real. President Trump posted his review of the Oscars, and he didn't like it. He didn't like it at all. He thought that Jimmy Kimmel was the worst host ever. So at the very end of the program, right before Al Pacino came up and they announced the best picture, and the best picture, of course, as everyone had predicted, is Oppenheimer, which won 7 Oscars, which puts it right up there among the biggest winners of all time. In any event, Jimmy Kimmel, right before they announced the best picture, read to the assembled multitudes and to the 1 billion people they think are going to see the Oscar ceremony in some form. They all heard Mr. Trump's tweet, his Truth Social posting, and then Jimmy Kimmel got the last word, at least last night. Protesters near the Oscars disrupted the ceremonies, delayed start of the Oscars a little bit in their demand for a Gaza ceasefire. And there's a back and forth going on between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel. And President Biden saying, yes, no one supports Israel more than him, and he's very strongly supporting Israel and Israel's right to defend itself. At the same time, He suggests that it would be a red line, whatever that means, unless Israel is successful in cutting down the number of civilian deaths. There's also Prime Minister Netanyahu used a figure which apparently is based upon all of the data and all of the experience that the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, have gotten from the ongoing almost 6 months now fighting in Gaza. According to Prime Minister Netanyahu, 13,000 of the so estimated 30,000 people who have died in Gaza are terrorists. They are literally combatants in Hamas, who, by the way, absolutely believe in suicide bombing and suicide missions and suicide as a great expression of their Islamic devotion. And with all of us at the edge of Ramadan, there is all kinds of discussion about whether or not Israel is going to put restrictions on potentially hostile and violent crowds on the Temple Mount. This is in the what is called the Noble Sanctuary by Muslims. And they built about 600 years after the destruction of the Second Temple, the temple that had been recently restored and improved by King Herod. That when that temple was destroyed, it was 73 AD. And it was about 600 years later that they built the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And the Al-Aqsa Mosque now, they have one of the Palestinian terrorist outfits is called the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. And it always seems to me, how do you recruit people for a military volunteer group called the Martyrs Brigade? I mean, doesn't sound that appealing. But in any event, 13,000 people have sought and received martyrdom, which means that, no, it's not a majority of all those people who have perished in Gaza, at least if you accept the Hamas numbers from the so-called Hamas Health Ministry. But it does show that the way that this is being promoted by various people, that it is simply the Israelis obliterating the homes and taking the lives of innocent civilians. No, it's not at all that simple. We'll hear some of the protesters at the Oscars. There was one, a filmmaker, who won a prestigious award for the best foreign language film, for a film that was filmed in German, which actually showed you what the life might have been like for the family of the commandant at Auschwitz. And it's a remarkable film. It's called Zone of Interest. The filmmaker who both wrote the screenplay and directed Zone of Interest, his name is Jonathan Glazer. He is Jewish, but he refuted, whatever that means, his Jewishness last night at the Academy Awards. We will get to that and what that means. There's also President Trump slamming not just Jimmy Kimmel, but his opponent for the presidency, Joe Biden. For what? For stuttering, which is something that, frankly, Joe Biden has been struggling with since he was a child. We will get to that and much, much more on a busy day, busy week, right here on the Michael Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, there's a great deal of confusion about what the Pope said. Pope Francis, who, of course, has been courageously battling some ill health. But he said in an interview that recorded last month, that was released on Saturday, just this Saturday, he said that Ukraine should negotiate an end to its war with Russia. Quote, I think that the strongest one is the one who looks at the situation, thinks about the people, and has the courage of the white flag and negotiates. That's what His Holiness said to the Swiss broadcaster RSI. The Pope's comments, which were interpreted as a call for Ukraine's surrender, of course, that's what a white flag generally means in international language, those comments were swiftly rebuked by Ukrainian leaders. The strongest is the one who, in the battle between good and evil, stands on the side of good rather than attempting to put them on the same footing and to call it negotiations. That's what the foreign minister of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, said in a statement on Sunday after the Pope's statement was released. Our flag is a yellow and blue one. This is the flag by which we live, by which we die, and by which we prevail. We shall never raise any other flags. Vatican spokesman Matteo Bruni clarified on Saturday that the white flag imagery that the Pope used had first been introduced by the interviewer, and that the Pope desired a diplomatic solution for a just and lasting peace. Meanwhile, also in Eastern Europe, the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, he's often described as a strong man in Hungary because he basically is not quite a dictator, but certainly somebody with overwhelming personal power and very much a cult of the personality, as Putin has achieved in Russia. But Viktor Orban said that former President Trump would not give a penny to support Ukraine in its war against Russia after the two met at Trump's Florida estate, Mar-a-Lago, last week. Orban told Hungarian news channel M1 that Trump wants peace in the Russian war against Ukraine, and the Hungarian leader said he backed his vision to achieve that. Well, this is because of all of the heads of state in NATO, all of them. Orban is the one who has the warmest relationship with Vladimir Putin. And the idea that we have Viktor Orban now speaking out and Donald Trump and the Pope, there's an unusual trio, all basically calling for Ukraine to surrender. There was a different message last night at the Oscars, because this is clip 2.5, Jeremy. The remarkable film, which won Best Documentary, feature-length documentary, is a film called 20 Days in Mariupol, which Mariupol was taken over by the Russians, who did unspeakable things to the population. And the filmmaker of that film was a extremely well-spoken and charismatic. His name is Mstislav Chernov. And he pointed out that he was the first Ukrainian in any Oscar category to win an Academy Award for Ukraine for this film. And as he received the award, the gold statuette, he had this to say to the world.
I wish I would never made this film. I wish to be able to exchange this to Russia never attacking Ukraine, never occupying our cities. I wish to give all the recognition to Russia not killing tens of thousands of my fellow Ukrainians. I wish for them to release all the hostages, all the soldiers who are protecting their lands, all the civilians who are now in their jails. But I cannot change the history. I cannot change the past. But we all together, I'm on you, some of the most talented people in the world, we can make sure that the history record is set straight and that the truth will prevail and that the people of Mariupol and those who given their lives will never be forgotten. Because cinema forms memories and memories form history. So thank you all, and thank you all. Thanks to Ukraine. Slava Ukraini.
Slava Ukraini is glory to Ukraine. And again, that was a moment, I guess you could say it's of politics, but it's beyond politics. Because the Ukraine war and the need for American support to provide ammunition so that all of the sacrifices that have been made so far, all of the dedication that has been applied so far, so that is not wasted, that can actually have a long-term impact, that would be very, very meaningful. There's also last night, the Oscars were delayed a little bit because they had some pro-Hamas protesters who were near the Oscars who were calling for a Gaza ceasefire. And their calls sounded like this. Clip three.
Shame on you!
Okay, and then there was a brief statement by Jonathan Glazer, who was the director and writer of The Zone of Interest, which won the Best Foreign Language Film. And he had this to say when he won the award for this movie about Auschwitz and the commandant of Auschwitz living next door to the killing.
Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
Okay, again, what does it mean as we stand here as men who refute our Jewishness? There were more comments and more confrontations at the Oscars. Plus, of course, I'm Just Ken. We will be right back on The Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, I mentioned earlier this hour that there were two new polls that just released that showed a move in the direction of Biden happening in what remains a very, very close election. And anybody looking at this polling that is occurring in the middle of March and thinking, well, that's it. No, what it indicates is that this is going to be a fiercely fought, very, very tight election. The one poll is by Emerson College. It's a poll of 1,350 registered voters, and it shows Biden moving ahead of the Republican Trump by 2 percentage points. According to this poll, which was taken between March 5th and March 6th, so it's before they could register the impact of the State of the Union, it shows Biden ahead 51% to 49%. And there was another poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation showing Biden leading Trump by a little bit more, 47% to 44%. That was a poll of 1,072 registered voters, and they were surveyed at the very end of February. so they are not right up to date. Then two more polls that just released. Biggest poll from Morning Consult. It was taken between March 1st and March 5th, and 6,334 registered voters. It showed 44% said that they would vote for Biden, 43% said they would vote for Trump. And finally, there's a TIPP poll that, again, when you have a pattern like this, it's kind of impressive because this, again, shows 1 point difference. So it's within the standard of error. The Biden beating Trump 43% to 42%. Now, I don't believe any of these polls have anyone running for no labels. I really don't believe they're going to get it together to have anyone run for no labels unless Robert Kennedy decides he wants to go over and join that group and use their access to the ballot in several states. He doesn't have good access to the ballot because he hadn't affiliated with any existing party or political organization. In any event, the idea that things are so very close, that goes along with both Trump and Biden speaking in Georgia. Biden spoke for 20 minutes in Atlanta, and apparently was very well received by the crowd and had that same feisty air that he did at the State of the Union. And Trump spoke for 2 hours. It's covered by Michael Gold, who was there. This is in Rome, Georgia. And they say, Michael Gold for the New York Times, early in his remarks in Rome, Georgia, at what was effectively his first campaign rally of the general election, former President Donald J. Trump on Saturday blasted President Biden's State of the Union address as an angry, dark, hate-filled rant that was more divisive than unifying. He then extensively mocked Mr. Biden's lifelong stutter, a jab that set the tone for the lengthy speech that followed. Over nearly 2 hours, Mr. Trump lobbed sharp personal attacks at Mr. Biden's mental and physical well-being, and revived a litany of grievances against political opponents, prosecutors, and television executives. He used inflammatory language to stoke fears about immigration and called the press criminals and repeated his false claim that the 2020 election was stolen from him. Well, of course he did. The other thing is he used the word for excrement, the word that starts with an S that we're not allowed to say on the air, but he's allowed to say it. He said it four times. And basically the way that they prefer to write about it in the Times is saying that Mr. Trump told thousands of his supporters gathered at the rally that everything Joe Biden touches turns to... Yeah, that's right. And the New York Times says filth in quotes, though he used an expletive to describe the result. Everything I tried finding a different word, but there are some words that cannot be duplicated, said President Trump. He used the word, or a variant, at least four times in his speech. In any event, Biden, in his speech, did not speak nearly as long. He spoke about, what is it, one-sixth as long. A two-hour speech is, that's a lot, even when it's fabulously entertaining, as, of course, all Trump's public speeches, especially the rally speeches, are. The idea of President Trump on the campaign trail, This is Trump mocking Biden's stuttering. Clip 18.
Didn't it bring us together? Remember, I'm going to bring the country to together. I'm going to bring it together. No.
Then he was on Squawk Box this morning on CNN. And on the Michael Medved show, President Trump has been busy, of course, and particularly given the fact that he pays very close attention to polling. He pays very close attention to what the press says, even though he believes they are all fake news. And generally, the response to President Biden's State of the Union address was, this isn't Gettysburg, this isn't FDR's Four Freedoms speech, it's not the I Have a Dream speech, it's not a speech that will live forever. But it's a speech that showed the front page of the New York Post, and the New York Post is not pro-Biden at all. It showed a picture of Biden pounding the desk and pointing in the air and looking very animated and lively. And they had the headline, "He's Alive," which with an exclamation point. And I think that Biden's State of the Union address accomplished that. But so President Trump is going forward and fairly aggressively going after people he doesn't like. And of course, the very, very top of that list is the man who's standing in his way to the presidency, whose name is Biden. But he also doesn't so much like E. Jean Carroll. After all, he has gotten a bond to cover the $83.3 million he owes her. I think it's actually because he owes her another $5 million from a previous case. Well, he was on TV. He was on CNBC, and on CNBC, he couldn't be stopped from issuing another attack on E. Jean Carroll that could lead to another court case or additional fines or defamation payments to E. Jean Carroll. Here's what it sounded like. Clip 19.
Because of what they've done to me, and I'm going to end up winning on appeal. And if I didn't win an appeal on these ridiculous decisions, if I didn't win an appeal to the most ridiculous decisions, including the Miss Bergdorf Goodman, a person I never met, I have no idea who she is, except one thing, I got sued. From that point on, I said, wow, that's crazy what this is. I got charged. I was given a false accusation and had to post a $91 million bond on a false accusation. People aren't moving into New York because of the kind of crap they're pulling on me.
Right.
And I feel like I'm a pioneer. What's happening is we have to be very careful. We have a very fragile country. People are rejecting it and they're watching. Normally somebody would be out of office, stuff like that happens. My numbers are much higher than they would have been had this not happened. But you have to be able to speak about it. It's a very dangerous thing, very, very dangerous thing for our country, what they're doing. It's the weaponization of the DOJ, the FBI, et cetera.
I don't know how the legal team of E. Jean Carroll, the victorious and a very well compensated legal team of E. Jean Carroll, will respond to. Again, one of the things where he says he'd never met her, didn't know who she was. They showed pictures of him with E. Jean Carroll. In the trial, they asked in his deposition, do you know who this woman is? And he said, yeah, that's my second wife, Marla. No, it wasn't. It was E. Jean Carroll. I mean, it's the idea that he's still trying to insist that he never met her, when he apparently was friendly with her ex-husband. But this entire thing the fact that this election campaign is going to be fought out on issues like this, and issues like his feud with Megyn Kelly. Okay, what's the point? Megyn Kelly was very successful when she was on Fox. She was less successful when she shifted over to NBC. But here is President Trump talking about why he thinks it's a good idea to revive his bitter feud with Megyn Kelly.
It worked, and then I got on television, and they asked me that horrible, horrible question. Remember? And I said, oh, my dad, that's the first question I ever got. Megyn Kelly, may she rest in peace. She's sort of making a career by pretending she likes me. And then, so what happened is she asked me that horrible question about women. Women love me. You know, I protect women. I protect.
The question she asked him was, she said, you've made some very harsh comments, called women fat pigs, and basically other insulting terms. And Trump answered back, I think, very cleverly. He said, oh, yeah, that was just Rosie O'Donnell. But still, that horrible, horrible question was in the first debate, not after he became president, but while he was first running for president. And I guess not answering questions like that is a direction Trump would prefer to travel. Who will he be traveling with? One name that people continue mentioning as his potential running mate is Carrie Lake. And I don't think there's a chance in the world that he will pick Carrie Lake because she's running for the U.S. Senate. And she's a strong candidate for the U.S. Senate. She almost won the governorship in Arizona. She's running against a strong Democrat named Ruben Gallego, who's a former Marine. But she will not let go of her rigged election claims concerning her own race for governor in 2022, and of course, President Trump's race in 2020. Listen.
If you had been vice president, would you have certified the 2020 election results?
These are crazy. This is like a hypothetical going forward and hypothetical going backward. I'm not going to entertain that. What I will entertain is talking about how do we go forward. And going forward, when we get an America First president and some great leadership in the Senate and the majority, we're going to do great things for the American people.
Do you still believe that your election was stolen?
We had major problems in our election, and we're really working to resolve those problems. We still have some court cases. What I'm concerned about going forward in the next election is that my radical opponent, Ruben Gallego, wants to give 9 to 12 million people who poured in illegally, invaded our country, the ability to vote. He wants them all to vote. That's wrong.
Did anyone give you advice to not talk about the 2020 election?
No. The 2020 election, I think it was a rigged election. President Trump, I believe it was.
And by the way, I'm not sure that Ruben Gallego would certify that, yes, he wants to give undocumented immigrants the immediate right to vote. I don't believe that is a position he has taken. But look, obviously, the question of border security is going to be a major issue in that Senate election in Arizona. And I would find it very hard to believe that the Republican Party, which is so close because the map helps Republicans this time, if the Republicans win in Arizona, if they win in Ohio, if they win in Montana, if they win in West Virginia, where the chances are excellent, they don't even need to win in all those places. All they need to do is win in two of them. And then they have a majority in the U.S. Senate. And with a majority leader who I think would probably work more cooperatively with President Trump than Mitch McConnell, who was a very effective majority leader in terms of getting the Senate to actually operate and function and help avoid things like government shutdowns. But the leader of the Senate is very likely to be John Thune of South Dakota. And look, John Thune is a mainstream Republican and somebody I think who could speak for the party very effectively. When we come back, there's more. There's Trump's intrusion. Well, it's not really an intrusion. He just couldn't let it alone. We now know what he thought about the Oscar ceremony last night because he became part of that Oscar ceremony. How? Well, let you judge and play it for you so you can get the flavor exactly right in this greatest nation on God's green earth.